G'day, it's Daniel Harford. Welcome to the Best of the Breakfast Club on RSN 927. It was jam-packed. Check it out.
Always great to see Adam White and chat to Adam White on a Thursday morning, any morning, in fact. And he's back again. Whitey, good morning.
Yes, good morning. How are we?
Going great.
That's good. That's good.
Did you bike ride yesterday, Whitey?
No, I didn't yesterday.
I'm
one day on, one day off.
Oh, okay, just building really, up slowly.
Well, I was listening to John Quinn yesterday, and he said, don't go too hard too early.
Important.
And I did go too hard in my session the day before because I got emotionally. What did I get? I got angry with a couple of people, Daniel.
What? Oh, yeah, that's right. Yes. Why did you get angry with them again?
Because
they overtook you.
There were two fat men, middle-aged men, who were wearing the same lycra. It was like a two-man pursuit. It was like, how many can you name from the four-man pursuit that won at the Los Angeles Olympics, one gold medal? I know one was Dean Woods.
That's the only one I've got for you.
Anyway, I'm going on, and I'm sort of going at a reasonable speed, I thought. And all of a sudden I hear the, passing, passing! And two blokes charge past me on a bike track. It wasn't even a road, and they annoyed me. So I thought, well, bugger that, and I tried to catch up to them. It wasn't a very good idea because it blew me up. And then as I started my journey back home, I was going that slowly that a girl on a bike with a basket in front with things off the handles.
Basket.
I was struggling to get sort of past her, and she's ringing a bell and all this sort of stuff, and I'm battling to go faster than an 8-year-old girl because these blokes blew me up.
So you hit lactic and you weren't able to recover.
No.
And it's taken you 24 hours to get back to normal state.
It is. I've talked before about the pensioners that that just flew past me up the hill, and it is a soul-destroying experience when you're trying to ride a bike, you know, properly for the first time in a very long time, just how bad you are at it. It's a really soul-destroying process.
The fact that you've been overtaken by an 8-year-old girl after being overtaken
by her.
No,
I wasn't overtaken by her. Oh. She was in my vicinity and I couldn't shake her off. I could just hear the bell in the background and
the basket on the front. It's a great image.
Well, I got past her comfortably and then I just couldn't make ground.
Right.
Couldn't get the gap, you know, like, anyway.
Well, it's all forms of courage, and you're showing that today by just getting up. The fact that you're upright and you're moving is a good start to the day. You know, they call that active recovery when you're moving after a performance like that, a physical effort like that. Active recovery, Adam.
Well, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. But it is, in all seriousness, though, it is an opportunity for people to make a commitment to themselves if they've got more time on their hands than they would otherwise want. To do that sort of thing. Now, that I've talked before about the amount of time I'm spending with my kids, it is actually fantastic because you don't usually get that opportunity. It's my wife potentially is getting a little bit sick of them, but you know, you do have those opportunities to do things perhaps you didn't want to do. Like I often think of things that you never have time to do. Like I'll give you an example. I've got a camera at home that's got about, I think, about 500, 600 photos on it. You know how you just take the digital photos, but you never get them developed or you never put them onto the computer. They just sit there on the camera.
Yes.
You know, that's a job you could do during these times. You know, that's one example. I'm sure there's plenty of others where the things that you never got time to do, that you could be doing these things now.
That is true.
Can you think of one?
I've got heaps of stuff around the house I need to be doing. I got you know that list. There's always a list,
yeah,
and it always exists. And it's normally on the fridge or it's in the office door. For my example, I just get a little stick-on list or post-it note sort of thing.
Yep.
And there's about 15,000 of them now.
Yep.
On the door, and I've got a list of things that I need to do. At some stage, I'm going to be encouraged to tick them off.
And even though you're at home doing nothing, you'll still find a way not to do those things on the list.
Absolutely. Because they're not very much fun, the things to do on the list.
Yes.
But you're right about the activity and the chance to just get out and do things and even just get out of the backyard and throw the ball around and all that sort of stuff. get down low on the post against your 12-year-old son and teach him some lessons, sort of the Kimbe Mutombo style. Oh, yeah, I took him to school yesterday. I just, not literally, but in a sporting sense. Down low on the post, he couldn't shake me. I was too strong for him. The powerful glutes got involved, and I just started dunking on him. He's a bit flat by that little fella, but you've got to learn your lessons.
Well, sometimes you need to be educated.
Oh, he was educated.
But it is homeschooling.
The really sad part for him was that after that, after I sort of broke his heart inside, I went outside just from range, just started draining threes. And that really hurt him because he couldn't get me inside or outside then. He's a broken man. He's a broken man.
There's a text that's come in. Isn't the third wheel someone who doesn't fit in? That's exactly right. That's why
exactly
Rama
right.
is joining us.
That is the perfect description.
The whole term was coined for this program because of Rama.
That is the perfect description for Rama.
Exactly. Exactly.
He is absolutely the third wheel. Hey, we had an incident yesterday, Whitey, at home. This coronavirus thing had its first real positive for us at home. I was flicking through the papers in the study and just trying to organize the office a little bit so I could do this job a bit better and talk to you properly without the distractions of being hemmed in by paperwork. And I saw something about Amazon, and then I had to change over the credit card. They've got a new credit card in. The old one expired, which is a disaster because you've got all your direct debits hooked up to the old credit
yes.
card. Then it
yeah.
expires.
Yeah.
And then you've got to work out what you've actually got hooked
yes,
up
correct.
To the direct debit and go through. And then you've got to actually end up waiting until you get this. You've defaulted on your payment, or we're going to turn the lights off because you haven't paid your bill, your dog. And then you got to find out and go back and change all the details. So I was doing a bit of that yesterday, too, amongst the paperwork. And I found on the credit card statement an email, a charge from Amazon. I was thinking, hang on a second. What the bloody hell is this? And then I saw an email that it had Rebecca's name on it.
Right.
From Amazon. I'm thinking, what the bloody hell is this? So I dig a bit deeper. And I went and saw Beck and I said, have we subscribed to anything from Amazon? Are you a shopper? Because, you know, the world's going around yes. Amazon.com. And
so are you a situation at home where all of a sudden boxes just appear on the doorstep? You don't know where they are from?
Yeah, there was a soft bag yesterday that appeared that had a pair of jeans in it for my 15-year-old daughter, which didn't have any, a massive hole in the bum. And I'm thinking, anyway, it's a sidebar. I'll bring that up later. But it was a bit distressing to see the hole in the bum, so we fixed that up. I'm going to stitch that up myself if I need to. So I dig a bit deeper. I said, Beck, have you subscribed to anything? She said, oh, I don't know. Righto. So I check into the email, and you know what's happened. No one knows exactly how it happened, seemingly, that no one's logged on or hooked up to this Amazon thing. But I've got now, without any knowledge prior to yesterday, Amazon Prime. I'm a subscriber.
Right.
Which means, Adam...
The test.
The doco of the Australian cricket team, I get access to it. And I didn't even know I could get access to it.
Right.
And the best part is, on top of that, that was one thing that really made my day. I needed the pick-me-up, and I got that yesterday when I can and get access to the test. And then I discussed with the family over dinner that we should watch this together as a family. Well, the look I got back... it was like, we should start chopping each other up with scissors. That's what they thought I must have said. It was horror. It was absolute horror. I said, we don't want to watch that. I don't want to watch cricket, Bex. No, not for me. William says, no, I hate cricket. Abby's going, who knows? Who
no.
cares? So, no, it's great news. That means I get access to the television at one stage by myself when they're out doing other things and I can just watch it uninhibited.
Yep.
And that was an outstanding end to an eventful day.
Right.
So I get access to the test and I get to watch it by myself. So I'm happy.
So you don't know still how it actually happened? Someone has to have done it, obviously.
Well yes, because I'm paying for it.
Like someone bought something and it's sort of the add-on is you get the subscription or something.
Yeah, they've ticked the box somewhere. But I actually don't mind now because I get access to it.
Yeah.
And then if I don't like it, I'll just cut it off after I watch the test.
Yep.
I reckon that's a good system.
Yeah, well, I'm keeping that for a weekend type setup, where I'll just watch it all over the course of a weekend. So I'm sort
right.
of keeping my powder dry in that sense. And also, I don't know how the hell to get it set up, so I need someone to help me on it. But that's what I'm doing.
Now, how are you feeling this morning? I'm concerned about you.
Prince Charles?
Not quite, but right. We'll go there first. It's close. It is close. Now, Charlie's got the virus.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
He's in the wheelhouse. He's in the demographic. It's a danger.
Well, he's only got mild symptoms, and he's locked himself away in Balmoral up in Scotland, so he'll be okay, I think.
You sure?
Yep.
Has he got medical attention?
Well, that's what that's the reports coming through. He's okay.
Concerned about him. He's in the wheelhouse.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure whether he's had any contact with his mum in recent times, but...
Oh, no. We can't have that.
No, but he's locked away.
Right. Well, that's not too bad then.
Mm.
That's not too bad. My other concern for you in a similar region was Wimbledon.
Yes.
Have you seen the news that's been released in the last little while by the All England Lawn Tennis Club?
Yeah. So what's happened there is that it's sort of like there's a couple of reasons why it's now in serious danger of not happening. Wimbledon said from the start that they wouldn't have the tournament if they couldn't have crowds.
Yep.
And then the other component to it is that because it's on grass, the grass tennis courts, they need to play it at a certain time of the year for obvious reasons. So they've only got a small window. So the reality is that once you get to probably September, you're not going to be able to play. And they can't play then anyway because the way it's set up, the US Open haven't changed its dates. The French Open are trying to push into that sort of September window. So sort of the inevitable feeling about it all is that it's just not going to happen. So they've called an emergency board meeting, which is coming up soon. And I reckon there's no chance they'll have Wimbledon this year now. So that would be a real shame, obviously, for tennis.
Yeah, emergency meeting next week, scheduled for the All England Lawn Tennis Club main board. They are preparing closely with the ATP, the WTA, ATF, and the other Grand Slams. The build for the championship is due to begin at the end of April. So when they start upgrading all the facilities and getting it into action starts at the end of April. So you'd reckon there's no chance that's going to happen.
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought so. I wouldn't have thought so. As I said, because of the grass factor, you can only play at a certain time of year. Now, Wimbledon is always in July. At the London Olympics when they played at Wimbledon, that was in August. And so that's fine. That's the last month of summer over there. You might remember when Andy Murray won, that was really quite dusty as you sort of got to the end of the summer and the end of the tournament. But, I can't see how it's going to happen now. So, I mean, obviously the Olympics, you don't get any bigger than that when it comes to a sporting event. That's already been pushed back, but at least they're still going to have it now. It happens every 4 years. But Wimbledon would be the first, seriously big event that's definitely been cancelled because we think of the Masters that's been postponed. They're still hoping to get that done maybe September, October. But, it would be very different if it was Wimbledon.
Well, similar situation, isn't it? Because the course gets burnt. Or
That's right. The dormant.
It's too hot.
That's the other thing is it either gets too hot or it gets dormant with the grasses that they use. So even if they played at the Masters in September, October, the characteristics of the course would be different.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, there is a text here. Do I wear padded nappy-type bike shorts to protect the rear end when I ride?
Region.
No, I don't.
Well,
I don't.
Well, you need to.
I ride in tracksuit pants or shorts.
You need to
I refuse to wear any cycling-related garments when I ride my bike.
See, this is the thing. There's garments out there that you wouldn't even know were cycling-related garments. But give me the padding. Give me the chamois, as they say.
No.
The chamois in the region,
see,
just to protect the boys and the bum. Like, it's an important thing to do.
No. You see, I don't pretend I'm a professional bike rider. I don't pretend I'm riding in the Tour de France like so many of these people. They get on the trails. If you're good at bike riding, you're not riding on the trail anyway, are you? You're riding on the roads.
No, it's not quite true.
I'm not going to pretend I'm good at it. I'm just going to ride in a recreational type way, and
well,
that means
serious.
Not wearing bike-related garments.
You're just protecting your regions. You've got to protect your region, Adam. Particularly if you're going to go back-to-back. If you're going to do 2 days in a row, you're going to need protection of the region. The chamois is the key to that. I'll talk you through it one day.
No.
When I get to see you again.
This is 13 days ago that this potential exposure happened. Just point out that the participant concerned is not displaying any symptoms of COVID-19 at the moment. If the participant's test is negative, that's the important part of that. If the participant's test is negative, then we will look to resume racing as soon as we can.
That is the voice of Giles Thompson, CEO of Racing Victoria, of course, on what happened yesterday. Whitey, we are no longer racing. Well, for 2 days, we're going to have a spell in the world of Victorian racing because one of the participants came in contact with someone on a flight that has been since diagnosed as positive with the coronavirus. So there's been a 2-day shutdown while we work out whether or not that participant, in fact, has been infected as well.
Yeah, exactly right. So that meant that the Sandown meeting was postponed after race two, which was a real setback because we had the tip from John Sadler for race three.
We
never got that far, unfortunately. We're 10 minutes short because clearly it would have won. And then as a result of the jockey involved, he had been riding on Golden Slipper Day, which, this is the whole thing of the exponential growth and the domino effect. So Sydney racing is also postponed. The hope is to get it back tomorrow if the test comes back negative. So there's two meetings in Victoria today, the day meeting and then obviously the night meeting. So hopefully we can get back and going tomorrow. But it does just show how the racing industry is really treading on the knife's edge at the moment, and for obvious reasons. And we hope that it can stay going as long as possible. But it just shows how delicate it is when this sort of thing happens, because the jockey involved, 13 days since they saw this person or was on that particular flight, and the jockey has showed no symptoms whatsoever.
Is it the same thing in New South Wales as well? Was there?
Yeah, it's related to the same thing. Yeah, that's my understanding. Now, I stand to be corrected there, because obviously you get swirling information all the time, but I think that's the case.
Well, Hawkesbury's... is it still going ahead today, or has that been called off as well?
No, that's not right. No, we're at Narromine and I think Toowoomba later today. So
yeah.
We don't have a lot of racing. Harness racing is in a similar situation where I believe a steward in New South Wales tested positive. So there's no timeline on the suspension. It's just been marked indefinitely at the moment. That's again for Victoria and New South Wales. So again, it's pending test results of the steward, I believe. It is very complicated. I apologise if I haven't got it exactly right, but that's my understanding of the situation.
All right, so a couple of days off for Victoria while we check that test and hopefully get back on the ground sooner rather than later. But as you rightly say, it just shows how precarious the whole situation is and how delicate it is at the moment in terms of the virus and how big an impact it's going to have on what's left. And there's not much left in racing. Was one left, but who knows how long that lasts with this sort of activity going on. We did get a winner yesterday, by the way, in the early mile, which was very good. And Jen Lacaze, Jen Gregson, who we spoke to yesterday about her record-breaking run around the tan, she got on and got involved with the love for that Whitey too.
Yeah, that's exactly right. She's on board. She's waiting for our tips to come through for Narromine today when we get onto a trainer, because that's where the early mail has to go today.
Well, so we do have one coming up later on in the early mail. Clint Lindholm's going to join us.
Right.
Big hand at Narromine today. I think he's got seven or so going around. So if we can't get one with Clint today, we're just not very good.
I think we can safely say that Clint will be making his debut on the early mail today.
Every chance that it will be the debut of Clint on the early mail later on today from Narromine.
Now, I've got some troubling news coming through from Gav, the greenkeeper at Torquay.
Yes, yes. Was he ahead of himself?
He was bullish yesterday that Torquay was going to remain open. It's closed, and it's indefinite.
Well, what's going on there? Because haven't we got golf courses that are still out at this stage? What's happened to Gav? Just sort that out for us.
Yeah, I know that Peninsula Kingswood closed yesterday as well.
Oh, did it?
Yep. I don't know what Brendan's going to be doing.
Brendan.
Yeah, so I'm not sure about all other golf courses, because it's really important that we can keep playing golf, I would have thought. It's an outdoor activity. But
I don't think it's going to happen if they're closing all the good courses.
No. And there's another one here. Excuse me. And we love the amount of text messages that are coming through. There's heaps of them. I don't think we've ever had more than we had yesterday. So we're trying to get to as many as we can. This is regarding the bike riding garments.
No, they don't.
Now, this is a very good point here. I don't wear full whites to the nets, and I don't wear full footy gear if I'm having a kick of the footy in the park. Couldn't have said it any better.
What's that got to do with the price of fish?
Well, you don't pretend you're riding the Tour de France when you're riding on the Main Yarra Trail for an hour bike ride.
Well, no one's suggesting you're riding the Tour de France. You're just giving some support
to the
region. That's
what those two fat blokes were doing. They were wearing matching. They thought they were in a peloton.
You know what they're doing? They're out there having a go in their Lycra. Good on them, I say. I say bring it. Bring it. Just wear as much of it as you can. Wear it around the house.
No.
Wear it to the shops.
Well, this is the problem they
to.
Do, don't they? They then waltz into a cafe. Well, they're not doing that at the moment, but
there's no waltzing anyway.
Waltz into a cafe, and they think they're athletes.
They're just wearing the appropriate attire to protect the region and make it as streamlined as possible.
Mm.
Streamlined as possible. Now, Kraz has got a concern about the future of Foxtel, and at the moment, what's the point of keeping it? Is the SMS? It's a good point. I was thinking about that yesterday. There's not much to watch. I've got the test on Amazon Prime if I need it. I don't know what I've got Netflix. What do I need Foxtel for, Whitey?
You're sounding like my wife.
Well, I'm starting to think about it.
I'm in a battle to keep it going myself at the moment. In general, outside sport. So
I didn't know there was anything outside sport until now.
Yeah.
I wasn't aware there was anything else that people did apart from sport.
Well, we've got the Chromecast. I don't know how it works, but we've got one apparently. And the kids have watched Toy Story 4, I think, every day for the last 4 days.
It's a good show.
It is one of the great movies of all time, Toy Story 4. A wonderful storyline. The whole series is fantastic. But the last one, usually as movies get along, they don't get as good. This one is fantastic.
You've been encouraged to buy a bag of concrete and harden up.
But I have hardened up.
That's what Salty and Tassie are saying.
I think I'm doing well. I'm not. I fought hard to get past that girl and stay in front of her.
To get past that 8-year-old girl. Oh, boy. Mm. What are we dealing with? Did you see that Gill's going to forego most of his salary? Did you see that today in the back page
of
the paper?
So what's your view on it? Now, I know you're involved in an AFL club, part of obviously the AFL system, which is AFLW system, which is now finished. But all this stuff that's coming out, are you consuming it or are you not?
You mean that the discussions between players and the AFL?
Yeah, the war between the players and the AFL and all this sort of stuff. How are you consuming that?
I'm just sort of absorbing it as it comes out. I don't know too much from any side, I must admit. I'm just sort of sitting in the middle like everyone else, reading the reports that are coming out and hearing the comments from participants on both sides of the equation. I did see Nick Riewoldt yesterday, and we've talked about this before, but he articulated it magnificently on that new Fox Footy live thing they're doing from 3 o'clock, which is quite a good concept, I must admit. And again, this is the opportunities that come about through this period of time where there's no actual footy to talk about. They've had to come up with and manufacture a concept to keep people entertained and informed and also give them a reason to pay the staff that's on the books there at Fox Footy. And he was talking about the messaging about from the player's perspective and what it could have been, should have been. And Kingy was prodding him a bit about what should they have done. If you were Patrick Dangerfield, what should you have said and that sort of thing. And he was very, very simple. And Jason Dunstall backed it up a little bit later on. He sort of just said, look, you know what? We will do whatever. The public message, my opinion, and what Nick was saying yesterday, should have been, we will do whatever we need to do to get the game back on its feet. We need the game. The game clearly needs us as players, but we will do whatever we need to do in terms of remuneration or cuts or whatever it might be until the game is healthy again. We want to help. That's what it should have been, I reckon. And I reckon they've missed the chance to get everyone on side with that. And what happens behind closed doors or the conversation that's had out of the public eye may be different on the back of that. But even just if it's a public sentiment to try and get the fans on side, because there's no... They're not winning a battle here at the moment, the players. It's just not the case. People are saying, you know, how could you be so pig-headed and stubborn, and people are out there hurting, losing their jobs and their livelihoods and maybe their homes, and you're sitting there worried about 2 months of pay, 50%. So they're losing the PR battle big time. Now, whether or not that's reality or not, we don't know. We're just reading the reports. But there was another way that they could have got their messaging out early, which I think they missed the mark on.
Yeah. And I don't disagree with that. I'm finding it really hard to consume it with all the other things that are going on, all the hardships that so many people are going through, when I see all that, it's like, no, I just can't, I don't want to deal with that. You know what I mean? I don't want to be thinking about that. And, you know, I think it was really interesting talking to Jack yesterday about the emotional toll it's having on him and seeing not so much the players, but seeing the people in administration and the support staff that, you know, might not be coming back to a job. I think that's relevant because everyone can relate to that in these set of circumstances. And, you know, the disappointment of not being able to play. I mean, we're going to talk to Sam Doherty later on. I mean, imagine what he's going through at the moment. You know, 2 years out of the game, plays his first game on Thursday night, plays really well, and then another indefinite pause. Yeah, that's going to be really interesting talking to him. But yeah, I think it's one of those unsavory things that's playing out publicly because there's nothing else in football to talk about. So that becomes front and center, doesn't it?
Well, it certainly does. But I think when there's such a dire situation for the game, let alone the community, if we just focus on the game for a second and the industry of Australian rules football, it's such a dire situation that we've never seen before. People are absorbed by that and really intrigued about how it plays out. And even to the point today with Jack Niles article and Pete Ryan's article on The Age telling us that the AFL now have directed footy departments to operate on a budget of $25,000 a week. For the whole department. Now, that's the report says that the average football department or weekly budget of a footy department with a soft cap is about $186,000. So that's $160,000 they've had to cut out of $186,000 to operate their footy department. Now, my understanding is the AFL have taken over all clubs' finances and given them basically an allowance, which is clearly what's sort of being intimated in this story as well, to try and manage the situation as best they can so that there is parity across the 18 teams as opposed to one club doing their own thing and who knows where that leads. So you think about that, 13.4%, they tell us in the story today, of the average weekly football budget. Now, whether or not you think that budget has been excessive and way too high in the first place, it's actually irrelevant.
Yes.
You've got to cut $160,000 out of $186,000. So when you see those numbers, and people will read those numbers today and think, hang on a second, the people are losing their jobs and they're cutting this game within an inch of its life at the moment, and this will be the public sentiment, and the players want to take 50% off for 2 months? Are you serious?
Yeah.
So that's the challenge they face.
Absolutely.
That was a really stark reminder of how dire the situation is, 25,000 out of 186. That's we're in all sorts. Tell you who else had the time of his life out in the AFL world was Scotty McLaren, former AFL umpire. Umpired 364 games of AFL footy, if you don't mind. And he's been good enough to join us on The Breakfast Club. Scott, good morning.
How are you, lad?
We're going very well, thanks. Was it the time of your life that they were telling us in that song?
Oh, no, it was a great ride to do that many games. And over, 17-odd years was great fun.
Now, you debuted, I'm not sure if you know this, you debuted on this day back in 1994. You remember that?
Oh, it's 26 years ago today, so that's half a lifetime ago for me. So, yeah, but no, it was good fun. The old Western Oval, as it was in those days.
That's right. Footscray and Richmond was the game that jumped out on debut, and it was a win to the home side by 2 points at Western Ovals. Also the day Scotty West, if you don't mind, debuted for the Western Bulldogs, or the Footscray as it was back then. But Scotty, there was a big moment for an umpire fraternity. It changed the game forever. You went from two umpires to three umpires. All you ever knew was three umpires. What did that look like behind the scenes for the umpiring fraternity in the build-up to that?
Well, all that happened very quickly. In that week, actually, we were all set to do the two umpire, and the AFL said, well, what about we do three? And then they said, okay, well, you put the two wages together for the two umpires and split it between three blokes, and then you can have a three umpire system.
So you hadn't trained it at all?
The AFL anything. It didn't cost the AFL anything. So, we trained for it, yeah, but we didn't think it would come in, and it did, and we really didn't know what we were doing there for the first few months. some might say we still don't know what
we're doing. So they've just given you the all clear in the last week of the build-up to the home and away season. That's extraordinary.
Yeah, I'm lucky enough to still be involved and do a bit of coaching work with the boys, and you know, without the crowds, obviously it was a different atmosphere, but, you know, didn't really impact the way we go about our job.
So what was it brought in for? Because if I remember correctly, it had a bit to do with things that were happening off the ball, and they wanted that extra official out on the ground to keep an eye on that sort of thing, so the other umpires, whoever were in control, didn't have to worry so much about that peripheral stuff. Is that kind of right?
Yeah, well, the game was getting too fast for us. I mean, our GPS stats were like 21 k's a game.
Right.
In the two umpire system, which was half a marathon, and it was just getting physically too hard for us. So we just needed to sort of divvy that up a bit, plus giving another angle on a third angle on a contest also helped as well.
And so from 21 kilometres a game, what did it go to when you had the three umpires? And what do they do now?
I mean, we have trial four as well, but, four, we're all sort of getting in each other's way. So I think we found the happy medium with three, and we operate it really well now using different angles to detect things like support free kicks and holding off the ball and all those sorts of things.
Yeah, so you don't know the numbers of what they do these days?
Oh, they're just doing like 15, 16.
Right, okay.
That's right. Only 15 or 16.
Yeah, exactly. So obviously the game has changed a lot since you first started umpiring. You know, often supporters bemoan the congestion and all that sort of thing. Is the game, do you believe, quicker now and harder to umpire now, or was it quicker back then when there wasn't as much congestion?
Oh, no, it's harder now around the ball,
yep.
Because the players are so fit. You know, you've got 36 in one half of the ground, and not like the old days when half an hour around and, you had traditional positions and everything. But, it was a different era, and it was great footy. It was, there was a lot of contested footy and, high scoring. And I remember that round one game, both sides kicking, 20 goals each. And I thought it was great.
I did too.
Do you remember much about your involvement in the contest, Scott? Is it one of those games that sticks out? Did you make your first decision? You remember what that was and that type of thing? Did they stick in your mind?
No, it's just all a blur. You just remember the pace of the game and just how fast it was to anything you'd ever umpired before. And all I remember was Matty Richardson up one end kicked about eight and Matty Croft up the other end kicked about seven. So it made the Brownlow votes pretty easy at the end of the day.
Well, you can clear up something for us, because we get a lot of feedback on this from listeners about the umpires always looking at the stats. They get bogged down by stats for the Brownlow medal votes. That doesn't happen, does it?
No, because we don't get access to the stats because, these days when you turn up to the ground, the mobile phones get handed in. And you don't get them back until you're walking out of the room. So, you've got no access to phones or stats or anything.
That's interesting.
A lot of people think that you get the stat sheets from Champion Data. They rock up at half time and say, here's the numbers, and then at full time, here's the numbers again. That's what they think, Scotty.
Yeah, it might help us a bit. But, I think, between the three of us, we get a, pretty good gut feel for who's going well.
So, just sort of back to when you were going through, from the grades all the way through, is it easier to umpire as the standard is better because you can kind of anticipate a little bit more about what's going to happen, or is it harder the higher the standard of the football is?
Obviously, there's more scrutiny at the highest level, so you're under a bit more pressure, but it's probably easier, I reckon, because it can be a bit more predictable, the styles of that the teams are going to play, whereas in suburban footy and that half from your Baldwin days, things can be a bit unpredictable with skills and errors and things and turnovers, whereas the AFL players cop a bit of flack for some of their skills and goal kicking at times, but really it's generally pretty elite, the standard, I reckon.
Tell you who makes me happy. Adam Romanowskis, the former Bomber champion, these days manager to the Stars. I reckon he would have been up to his eyeballs in phone calls in the last little while. Rama, good morning.
Very good morning, guys. Very good morning. I'm missing you guys already, but it's been a busy time, to say the least.
You couldn't work out how to get online properly? just on the phone for you today?
Well, I heard the I heard all the early mail, and I was all connected. And then I think when I think Johnny Bowden must have pressed the button that he shouldn't have supposed to in the newsroom. So I'm blaming Johnny.
Johnny Bowden, for goodness sake.
So anyway, we're here, and it's quite different being in the lounge room rather than being in the studio.
Yeah, that is absolutely true. Hey, Rama, how's your week been?
Yeah, it's busy. Yeah, no doubt about that. But it's, you know what, it's been pretty pleasing with the reaction of most of the players, and then obviously the coaches as well. We talk about the players at the moment not being able to play the game, but you know, the majority of coaches that have been stood down as it stands right now and have uncertain futures, has been, I think that's probably been more difficult than probably the conversations with the players, to be honest with you.
So the public's read of the situation is everyone's at war. It's what the reports are telling us, Rama. What's the reality?
Nobody's at war at all. That's the reality of it. I think it's like any negotiation in anything in life. The players absolutely know that they're going to have to take a pay cut, but how that looks and what's actually fair is going to take time. We've got to remember they started negotiating basically, you know, straight after Gill announced on, I think it was Sunday afternoon, that the games were going to be postponed for a period of time. So, you know, like anything in life, things do take time, and we are talking about a significant amount of money here. So the players want to make sure that they have all the information before they can make an informed decision.
So just on that, Ramo, sorry to cut in there half, because this is, I think, the thing that gets people a little bit emotional. Yes. Is when they say they want more information, they want to know timelines and all that sort of thing. No one can get that.
No, that's exactly right, Whitey. I mean, I think, you know, people just expect players to go, yes, yep, we're happy to do that, we're happy to do that. Well, they're absolutely happy to take some sort of decrease in their wage. But like anything in life, they can't just go ahead and say, yep, we'll do that. They've got to have information provided. The AFL Players Association are doing a terrific job, and they're talking to the players as much as they can to give them as much information. They're talking to us agents as much as we can, as much as they can to give us the information. There's a small subcommittee, so I don't think the AFL and the players are at war by no means. I just think it's just taking a little bit of time, and you know we do have time here. I don't think we're anywhere near close to going back to training or going back to games. Now, I get there's a small urgency in all this, but at the same time, let's get the deal right, and that's fair. And if they do come back to training when we hopefully all expect, and that's at the start of May, well, they will have taken a pay cut by then, no doubt.
This is the other thing, Ram, which I reckon gets up people's gut, because the game seems to be so dire, and we referenced earlier this morning that footy departments are now being told that they've got $25,000 to spend a week instead of $186,000 to spend a week on their footy departments. And whether or not that's excessive or not is irrelevant. It's 25 instead of 186, 185, let's just round that out. And then we hear from Eddie Maguire and Jeff and Gillen and all those key power brokers in the system that there's actually no money coming in anymore. So it's actually not a negotiation. It's just this is what's there and this is what you're going to have to cop. So is there a reason to be negotiating when we actually don't, as Whitey said before, we don't know what it looks like anyway, and there's not going to be much to negotiate on anyway, is there?
Yeah, but that's what's probably coming to light at the moment, half. I think now that the AFL are prepared to give the information around what is there and what isn't there anymore. I think the players, along with obviously the Players Association who are negotiating on their behalf, can see that. And then that information then can be taken back to the playing group and explained.
So if
I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying with that. And, you know, I don't know if that's correct in terms of that wage bill for football departments. I've got no idea if that's true or not.
I'm pretty sure it is. From my knowledge.
I'm not questioning you by any stretch, but that's the type of information I think they want and need to see.
So if it's 13% of the regular wage bill or operations bill for a footy department or thereabouts, 13.5%. So, and we know that there are clubs out there losing 80% of their staff, sending them down for the remainder of the period, the shutdown period, and possibly a fair chunk of that of those people will not come back into football just because of the way it'll work going forward. If it's getting to a point which starts 80% and 13.5%, if it gets to a point where the players will be given 20% of their wage for the rest of the year, is that going to be suitable?
It won't work out to be 20% of their wage.
They've already been paid 5 months.
Yeah, that's right. They've already been paid 5 or 6 months of that wage. They'll get a full pay, I think, at the end of this month, or some have already been paid. Some clubs pay on the 15th, some clubs pay on the at the end of their month, but I'll get that. That would be, I imagine, that would be tricky. That would be tricky for anybody. But like you said before, there's some staff members at clubs that won't be getting paid at all for the next 2 months. So the players are well aware of that situation as well. So, where they sit right now, as we know, is they're happy to take a 50% pay cut for the next couple of months and then reassess from there. Now, as it stands,
I don't think they can afford that, Emma.
Well, that's right. That's exactly right. So, again, that's where I think Gill and the AFL, they need to put all this information on the table so the players can actually see the genuine state of the game.
I wonder, guys, whether if Gil McLachlan had his time again, and I think he's done a fabulous job through this in how he got it going and then the way he stopped it and the way he has communicated, but actually putting a potential start date out there, Rama, sort of might not have been the right way to go about it. You know, I think from an NRL perspective, it's just an indefinite pause. There's other sports that are in that boat, but by putting it out there, yes, it gives hope, and you kind of think, we'll be back by this, and the players only have 5 weeks off, then they get back into the club, so they're kind of seeing it as a short term thing. When the reality is, it might be a short term thing, but it might also be a long term thing.
Yeah, and that's a really good point, Whitey, because I think that's one of the key points for the players at the moment. As I've said, I think they're all thinking glass half full, but they will be back, by that May 4th or the like. Now, a couple of them have already made pretty silly decisions with some of their gatherings, so they might want to tighten that up a fair bit now and stop doing that. I agree, because that's probably been the key basis of what the Players Association have been talking about to the AFL, yet we're happy to take a pay cut, more than happy to, and we know we have to, but are we able to reassess when we do come back?
Because I don't necessarily agree with it, but I can understand it from a player's perspective, that they're being told, hey, we're going to get 17 games in, it's just